Blog Talk Radio.
Obama.
Yeah, it's been over 10 years since I spoke to a slightly larger crowd. When I was running for president, I'm as excited as I have been ever. I'm here to begin. Before I left office, I had to make some decisions about what I would do the end of my presidency. And I knew that I wanted to catch up on my sleep. I had with me, I asked myself, all right, I can do that I care deeply about. I believe climate change. I believe gender equality. I could have. There's only one of me. I've held my last political office, but Am I correct? Before I came out, that I had when I was I wanted what I wanted. I was elected to my office, and I'd say when I helped, I was the first. If I had, and my theory, I can get, turns out it's only mine. If I can my own, as I said, I'd like. I actually think I'd have to say no. I'm sorry, and so I'm not gonna. I know that I had to work on that. I want what I. That's what I'm gonna do now. And then I'll fight for me when I was a president. I do worry. I think I will not. Sorry, because I can't give me an idea. Because I think my own country. Unfortunately, I think I'm assuming. I was very clear. I'm looking at you. I would say than I do. I should be asking you. I'll make more like me and less like me. You know, my father's. And the reason I say that is because I think. And I worry sometimes. And I don't have.
Okay. That's enough. No, that was not Barack Obama on acid. Or cocaine. James Bostic here, Conservatives Perspective. If it's Tuesday and it's around 7 p.m., then we are live through blogtalkradio.com at the Patriot Nation Radio Network. www.blogtalkradio.com. You go there, type in Patriot Nation Radio, or you can go to any of the places out there where we have the link liberally besprinkled, and you can find it that way as well. We do it Tuesdays and Thursdays live, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We have a recorded version of the program now being heard on Mojo 50 Radio, Mojo50.com. You go there, you can check it out, or you can find it on the iHeartRadio app as well. Okay, so, but anyway, what you heard there, and I have, now believe it or not, you know, I'm not going to put you guys through it because I think too much of it. I have 5 minutes of that, and what that is those are clips from a speech that the president gave in Germany over the weekend, where basically the narcissistic bastard referred to himself 467 times, one speech in Berlin. And apparently the post-presidential era of his life seems to be a bit of a challenge for Barry, at least certainly to his ego. Never really shy about referring to himself while he was president. And now that that man in the White House is reversing his policies and spectacularly succeeding at it, it's got to be hard on this guy's self-esteem. And let's not forget, and we're going to get into it later in the show. Man, I am awesome when it comes to laying out these strings sometimes. And let's not forget, there's also a pretty serious psychological pressure that's probably building in the wake of the collapse of the Russia hoax, and I'm sure some kind of an investigation into how all that got started and who the principal players are. So what is a comparatively young fellow, 57 years old, decades of life ahead, what's he do to compensate for this? Well, self-reflection and personal growth are out of the question, of course, because this is Barack Obama, after all, the man that claimed to be better at everything than his aides that were charged with his speech writing, economic policy, and so much more. So it would appear that we're not going to go that route, that defensive ego boosting is the chosen course. Now, as it happens, this speech that we gave these clips of Obama referring to himself, it was from Berlin. And if you remember, it was in Berlin in 2008 where he gave a speech there to Brandenburg Gate, largest crowd of his career. It was like about 100,000 in 2008, maybe 1,000, if that, in Berlin over the weekend. So here's a breakdown of his personal pronoun use. And this is an estimate. I, 312 times. Holy Jesus. I, 312 times. Me, 33 times. My, 43 times. I apostrophe D, 9 times. I am, 61 times. Myself, 9 times. You know, the criminality of so many of these people, and and if you don't want to call it criminality, okay, fine, whatever. The malicious intent of some of these cats is stupefying. It's astonishing to me at times when I ruminate on it. And obviously, you got to have a pretty healthy ego if you're seriously going to run for president of the United States. Okay? I mean, that's all there is. Why would you, unless you had confidence in yourself? There's my buddy Gary. Hey, Gary, thanks for sharing it, man. I appreciate it. Gary Benford, Nation Savers 2018. Go check out their Facebook presence. He graciously allows me to post for the show there. And we want to make sure and give him his props because he's an awesome dude. So, you know, when you run for president, obviously you got to have a healthy ego. You have to believe in yourself. You know, when you aspire to that level of achievement, you know, it's not for the faint of heart. So we have this as an understanding. And just in the interest of disclosure, I would make an excellent presidential candidate because I got a big old healthy ego too. But you get my meaning. You got to have confidence in yourself. You got to believe in what you're doing. Otherwise, you know, they're going to eat you alive. And so it's understandable. We know this going in that these guys, you know, there's going to be a certain level of this. But holy cats, man, Barack Obama, he just took it. He put it into warp drive. I mean, seriously. So he has fallen from the shadow. Okay. He's no longer in the spotlight, so to speak. And when Donald Trump came to the fore, even during the campaign, he sucked a lot of oxygen out of the room. And, you know, not that they considered him one, but I'm sure that due to Donald Trump's presence, and what I'm talking about was, you know, we'll talk about stage presence. Let's just put it that way. And he has tremendous stage presence. No matter where he's at, he's the guy you're looking at. He's the guy that you know, you want to see what he's going to do. You want to see what he's going to say. And in many levels, because of the sensationalism of the 2016 campaign and the all the drama and all the craziness that was concomitant with that, Barry kind of had to take a back seat. And Barack Obama doesn't like to do that. But he didn't have any choice. And ever since then, ever since that time, and I know, you know, he's got stuff going on behind the scenes. He's got this zillion-dollar contract with Netflix to turn out left-wing progressive Marxist socialist, communist propaganda films aimed at poisoning the minds of the younger citizens and trying to effectively destroy the country. But, you know, he's doing these things, but he's not on the forefront anymore. Yeah, he gives speeches here and there. Like I said, this thing in Germany, yeah, it was a yawner. You know, it was just another one of his post-presidential, well, you know, even during the presidential, it was all I, me, my all the time. There was some guy, somebody helped me out with this. There was somebody, I'm thinking about somebody in the Bible. I. All the time, about seven times at least, somewhere like, I think he wound up getting kicked out. And, you know, I just can't, I'm sure it'll come to me at some point in the program. But I think you get my meaning. So in a way, it's got to be tough on Barack Obama right now. He is not where he was for 8 years. He was out there running at mouth, saying all kinds of stupid things, doing all kinds of stupid things. Somebody's, and Barack Obama is a classic example. A lot of liberals fit this. I can't remember who did the meme. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But I would like to give him credit if I did know. But you know, debating liberals and watching liberals, you know, when they're doing what they do on the various issues that concern the American citizen in the 21st century, it's like playing chess with a pigeon. Do you guys know this one? You know, it's like playing chess with a pigeon. The pigeon knocks over all the pieces, and then he poops on the board and struts around like he won the argument. And that's exactly what goes on here. They're so self-insistent. Yeah, that's the phrase I'm looking for, self-insistence. And we have to accept a certain level of that. We just have to. That's how this goes. There have been self-effacing men. I think there have been humble, self-effacing men that have been in the White House. Probably not too many in the 21st century. Eisenhower, perhaps one. Harry Truman, I believe, to be one. Kennedy, Johnson. No, I don't believe they were particularly modest men. I'm not saying they were bad men. I'm saying, I think maybe Gerald Ford. I think Gerald Ford was a fundamentally humble and self-effacing fellow. But not many. And Donald Trump is no exception, I'm sure. You know, he's a lot of that, I think, has, again, stage presence. How many times have I told you cats all this, so much of this, Washington, D.C. politics in special consideration? It's show business for ugly people. They're on shows all the time. When they go out, people are taking their pictures all the time. You know, instead of saying, hey, Gerald Nadler, what are you wearing, you big fat tub of goo? They'll probably say, hey, Gerald Nadler, what'd you have for dinner? The buffet, naturally. Okay. But you get my meaning. And so they go on the Sunday shows, and they're on Fox, and they're on all the alphabet networks, and they're bloviating and spouting out their metal flatulence and going through their things. But I think for the time being, in these first years of the Trump administration, from Obama's standpoint, it's like people are probably saying, Barack who? And 15 years from now, 20 years from now, provided that the president continues his success in negating and otherwise marginalizing or invalidating Obama policies that were detrimental to the country, and there were a cornucopia of those, it's going to be even more so. Barack, who wasn't he president or something? Wasn't he on TV? That's what it's going to come down to. And for a guy like Barack Obama, that's got to be bad. That's got to be bad. You know, when Nixon left office, and I remember this, he was castigated until the time of Donald Trump. He was castigated like no one else in modern times for years after he resigned office. What's been happening with Donald Trump, and again, I'm trying to gauge it based on a perspective of a 10, 11, 12-year-old kid, very politically aware, very current events aware, 10, 11, 12-year-old kid, as opposed to what I've seen with a much more jaundiced eye towards Donald Trump. And I think what Trump has gone through has eclipsed what Richard Nixon suffered from. And then both men suffered, no doubt about that. But I digress, as sometimes I do on this show. We're going to talk about John Brennan, Johnny Red. Special love line dedication out to John. And all this came up on it was 4 days ago, so I guess that was Monday, Sunday, Saturday, Friday. On Friday, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, the ranking member, Devin Nunes, and this guy's in the news, and he's going to be working some stuff. He had a really good op-ed article in the Washington Examiner, and he's looking, you know, at the end phase of this whole Russia collusion conspiracy stuff. And everything inside the op-ed was 100% accurate. We're spot on. We're not taking exception. We're not even taking issue with that. But our friend Sundance at theconservativetreehouse.com talks about something that Nunes omitted in his chronology, and there's probably reason for it. So we're not condemning Devin Nunes on this. He's in a tight spot, and here's what I'm talking about. And this is where we lead up to Big John. At this stage, everybody who's following this is pretty much aware that there were two parallel operations, two investigative paths that were at work in the 2016 election. There was the official government investigation, Crossfire Hurricane, through the FBI, and there was another investigation, an unofficial investigation, the dossier assembly via Chris Steele and Nellie Orr through Fusion GPS. Both of these operations originated and were in synergy with the entire vast Russian conspiracy narrative and all the things that went with that. I know, man. We got to get into the weeds, but we don't. If we're going to chase these guys and we're going to run this stuff down, we got to go into the weeds. So get your machetes and stay with me. One of these operations was a function of elements outside the traditional framework of government through Fusion GPS. The second operation was specifically happening inside government, spurred by CIA Director John Brennan. Have I mentioned that in 1976, John Brennan voted for the Communist Party USA candidate Gus Hall for president? Have I touched on that? I keep meaning to, and sometimes I'm not sure if I have or not. So John Brennan, CIA Director John Brennan, and it started with the delivery of his EC, electronic communications, officially creating the Crossfire Hurricane counterintelligence investigation. Now, Crossfire Hurricane started July 31st, 2016. Later in the year, the FBI investigation merged with the Fusion GPS investigation through the use of the Steele dossier. And that led to the FISA application on Carter Page as a way to enmesh these two investigative paths. Representative Nunes does an excellent job explaining the Fusion GPS network, which included people we've talked about before, people in the Rogues Gallery that we will be focusing on, Glenn Simpson, Nellie Orr, Christopher Steele, and eventually Nellie's husband, DOJ official Bruce Orr. They say DOJ official. He was an assistant attorney general. Not the attorney general, but an assistant. He's like third tier, which in the DOJ, pretty high up. Now, Bruce was on the bridge to import opposition research, namely the dossier. He was going to bring that in from the private sector, and he was going to find a way to inject this information into the FBI intelligence apparatus. The Fusion GPS operation was, as Representative Nunes correctly describes, based on the foundation of the Steele dossier. You need to go check out that article, April 5th, Washington Examiner. It's really great. But the absence, according to Sundance, within this outline is the second operation. The operation that originated from within the United States government, within the United States government, the CIA operation started by, you know who, John Brennan. The external team, Glenn Simpson, Nellie Orr, and those folks at Fusion GPS would not have been able to instruct Joseph Mifsud, who is a Maltese professor located outside the country, who was also an FBI CIA asset, or Alexander Downer, an Australian diplomat, or Stephen Halper, who's a UK, United Kingdom academic brainiac type, but also an FBI CIA asset, or Charles Tawil, an Israeli CIA asset. GPS could not have instructed these individuals, Mifsud, Downer, Halper, Tawil, to make contact with the principals named inside the Trump campaign. George Papadopoulos, who has a book out talking all about this, Mike Flynn, General Mike Flynn, or Carter Page. Those contacts that were made there were covert and unofficial government missions for the weaponized U.S. intelligence operation. Now, to a certain extent, I think we can understand, given Devin Nunes' position as the ranking Republican on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, he wouldn't want to, you know, attract a whole lot of attention to this second government operation due to the potential collateral damage that could hit our intelligence capabilities. He's not protecting the bad guys in the intelligence community. He's trying to protect the intelligence community as a whole. There's a way to weed these cats out. So since he's in charge of keeping these intelligence capabilities as intact as possible, he's kind of between a rock and a hard place. He doesn't want to see these guys get away with this. Excuse me. He knows what's going on. But he's in this conflict. And what's going to happen, possibly, and it's something we need to be worried about, is that the U.S. intelligence system in toto is going to take this same approach toward defending their conflicted interests that Nunes is taking. As a matter of fact, it's not really much of a leap in the imagination to anticipate Brennan, John Brennan, and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, and Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe, counting exactly on this conflict that Nunes is in to try and help their own escape from accountability. And that leads us up to our next story concerning this. And what we're going to be talking about has to do with criminal referrals that Nunes has sent to the Department of Justice. But now we go on to John Brennan. This is what I wanted to bring out. This operation that they're talking about was all part of the coup. Now, Rand Paul, a couple of weeks ago, I think he was on one of the Fox shows. Let me see if I can find this. He was on one of the Fox shows, and he made a remarkable claim. And Rand Paul's pretty sharp cat, knows what's going on. And he has his sources, too, concerning John Brennan and his role that was played in the dossier. And here's some more information about Rand Paul.
Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky tweeted out last night this shocking claim, breaking: a high-level source tells me it was John Brennan who insisted that the unverified and fake steel dossier be included in the intel report. Brennan should be asked to testify under oath in front of Congress as soon as possible.
Senator Rand Paul joins us now to explain. Senator Paul, what more can you tell us about the lead you got?
Well, my source tells me that the intelligence community, Obama's intelligence community, Brennan, Clapper, Comey, they were frustrated because they had this Russian dossier, but nobody believed it was real. It wasn't verifiable. They couldn't get anything of it. So they sent spies into the Trump campaign. They tried to entrap Trump officials to admit they were working with Russia. That wasn't working. And so they were frustrated, but they wanted to somehow get this information out, this Russian dossier, that even the media wasn't publishing. Nobody would publish it because it was so scandalous, unverifiable, and likely fiction. So finally they decided, well, what we have to do is attach this dossier, this fake dossier, to an intelligence report. So the president receives these intelligence reports, and they're given directly to the president. Well, what they do is they staple to the report the Russian dossier. So now Obama's officially seeing it, and then also it's given to Trump at this point. But realize that this is a big circle. They'd had the dossier for months and months. So when John McCain is given the dossier, it's given to him by people who may have leaked it from our government to John McCain, so John McCain can give it back to the FBI. I mean, it's a crazy circle, all trying to justify something that wasn't true, but extraordinary power of these people and extraordinary corruption. And they almost brought, you know, they tried to bring down a sitting president. This shouldn't happen to anybody. And when President Trump spoke to us this week, he said he doesn't want it to happen to any future presidents, Republican or Democrat, that the intelligence agencies use all of their power of surveillance to actually try to bring down a sitting president.
Yeah, you say that Brennan, Clapper, and Comey were all frustrated. What's frustrating is they use this dossier, this unverified, salacious dossier, very scandalous, as you say, to try to take down the president. You tweeted out you have a high-level source. I doubt you're going to tell us who the source is, but I have to ask, who's the source? And if you're not going to tell me the name, how trustworthy is this person?
You know, I think it comes from someone who has a great deal of information about what's been going on. Not everybody, I mean, nobody knows the complete picture yet. And that's why I'm in favor of, you know, the president has now said that he's going to declassify some of these documents. See, I believe that the dossier, you know, had been held by the FBI for several months. you know, Brennan starts his little group to investigate it. I believe at that time they did talk to President Obama about it, and I think they should all be asked, when did President Obama learn about this, and what was his recommendation? He's in charge of the government. Did he recommend that you try to spread the dossier throughout the government? Remember those reports right around the time of the election, right after Trump won, they were saying that Obama officials were spreading this information throughout government. They were spreading the dossier, and they couldn't gain traction, so then they released it to people outside government, reporters, who would write a story, and then they would say to the FISA judge, look, there's a story being written about this dossier. It must be true.
It's exhibit A. Well, and it'll be interesting when you're able to call Mr. Brennan in front of Congress. That's going to be great. A member of Congress got the attention of the president this morning in a tweet. I want to read it to you, Senator. Congressman Adam Schiff, the president writes, who spent 2 years knowingly and unlawfully leaking and lying, should be forced to resign from Congress. What do you think about that?
Pretty strong words. I think we should see the evidence. I think if you're on the intelligence committees or any committees that handle sensitive material, leaking that to the media is a crime and ought to be a crime. And we have certain rules for congressmen, so you can say things in public on the floor in the spirit of debate. You can't be censored for that. But if you're from a committee, hearing a classified hearing, and then you're talking to a reporter about it, that is a real problem. It's one reason why whenever I go to a classified hearing, I don't stop and talk to the media immediately, because I want to make sure that I've collected my thoughts and that I don't reveal anything that came from the classified hearing.
But it does happen a lot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it comes all throughout government. That's a sad thing. It comes from the Pentagon. It comes from the Department of State.
Yeah.
I talk to ambassadors, our ambassadors overseas, and some of them are afraid to talk to me on official lines because they're being listened to by other members of our government.
Yeah. And by the way, the Democrats are not buying the summary. They still think the president colluded just about to a person. They just can't get enough of this story.
Yeah, and I think what's going to happen, and what I'm telling people, is I'm okay with the Mueller report coming out more completely, but in addition, we need to have information on Obama, White House officials, Comey, Brennan, Clapper. That should be part of it, because the report is the conclusion, but the beginning is, why did we get to the report in the beginning, and did someone misuse their office? So if Democrats want the complete Mueller report, I'm going to object until we get a complete report of all the Obama-era officials that got this thing started.
Okay. You're not alone. A lot of Americans feel that same way. Thanks so much, Senator, for being with us.
Thank you.
John Brennan. Now let's take a look at John. He was born in New Jersey in 1955. He got a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science from Fordham University in 1977. In 1976, he voted for Communist Party USA presidential candidate Gus Hall. Now people get excited. You know, well, they don't get excited. You know, you say that all the time, man. Who cares? So what? Well, yeah, to a certain extent, I'll go with that. But here's the so what. In 1976, we were at the height of the Cold War with Russia and China and their communist satellites. The Communist Party USA at that time, in 1976, the height of the Cold War, was dedicated to what? Well, they were dedicated to gaining support for Soviet foreign policy, which is, you know, when we translate that, support for Soviet world domination with the intent of defeating the United States. John Brennan voted for this guy. Moscow regularly gave Gus Hall thousands of dollars to enable the communists in America to carry on their work. In his defense, Brennan says that he was unhappy with the system and saw the need for change. No, that's it. That's all he had to say about it. In 1980, he earned a Master of Arts degree in government from the University of Texas at Austin. Now, in his graduate thesis, he denied the existence of absolute human rights. And he argued rather in favor of the type of censorship that was being shown by the Egyptian dictatorship of Anwar Sadat. Now, since the press can play such an influential role, he said, in determining the perceptions of the masses, I'm in favor of some degree of government censorship. inflammatory articles can provoke mass opposition and possible violence, especially in developing political systems. Also, in 1980, Brennan joined the CIA as an intelligence director, and in the 90s, he served a stint as one of the daily intelligence briefers for Bill Clinton. According to one CIA official in 1998, it was John Brennan who was instrumental in preventing an operation that would have killed or captured Osama bin Laden, and instead advised Clinton at that time, 1998, advised Clinton to trust the Saudis to take care of the al-Qaeda leader. He was appointed chief of staff to CIA Director George Tenet in 99. From 2001 to Aught-3, he was the deputy executive director. Aught-3 to Aught-4, he headed the newly created Terrorist Threat Integration Center. And in Aught-4 to Aught-5, he directed the National Counterterrorism Center. He left government in 2005 and became CEO of the Analysis Corporation, a Virginia company that supported the federal government's counterterrorism efforts. He also chaired the Intelligence and National Security Alliance. In 2006, on an interview with C-SPAN, when talking about Hezbollah, this is what Brennan said. He said, it would be nice to be able to put Hezbollah in a category of being totally evil, but Hezbollah as an organization is a very complex one that has a terrorist arm to it. It has a social and political nature to it as well. And I would just like to take a moment to point out that the social and political nature of Hezbollah's organization are also in agreement with its terrorist arm, just like they would be with Hamas and every other militant Muslim faction. They all want to drive Israel into the sea. They live for the extermination of the Jewish state. Under Bush, he says that enhanced interrogation techniques were an absolutely vital tool, and they had without a doubt been successful in saving lives. To get a job with Barack Obama, he called himself a strong opponent of many of the policies of the Bush administration, such as coercive interrogation tactics, to include waterboarding. He has taken a strong line in favor of advocacy of leniency, and I would even go so far as to say appeasement of Muslims almost from the time they became, they came to the forefront as a serious threat to United States national security interests. He's kind of been leaning that way towards cutting them a break, towards looking the other way. He goes on, and when he's working in the Obama administration, after he had been in favor of all these things and advocating their usage in the Bush administration, he goes to work as CIA director for Barack Obama, and we're not going to say that anymore. We don't like that, and we're not even going to call it a global war on terror. Do you remember when they came up with that stupid man-made global contingency, Brennan? He wasn't one of the stooges on TV saying it too much, but that's where it came from. He was stationed overseas. I'm looking it up right now. Oh my gosh, here it is. Okay. In February 2013, a former Marine named John Guandolo, who had worked for 8 years in the FBI's counterterrorism division as a subject matter expert regarding the Muslim Brotherhood and the global spread of Iran or Islam, had this to say about John Brennan. He had converted to Islam years earlier in Saudi Arabia. Now listen to this. Mr. Brennan did convert to Islam when he served in official capacity on behalf of the United States and Saudi Arabia. That fact alone is not what is most disturbing. Here's the thing. His conversion to Islam was the culmination of a counterintelligence operation against him to recruit him, to convert him. The fact that Foreign Intelligence Service operatives had recruited Mr. Brennan when he was in a very sensitive and senior U.S. government position in a foreign country means that he is either a traitor or he simply has the inability to discern and understand how to walk in those kinds of environments, which makes him completely unfit to be director of Central Intelligence. The facts of the matter are confirmed by U.S. government officials who were also in Saudi Arabia at the time that Brennan was serving there, and they have direct knowledge. These are men who work in very trusted positions. They were direct witnesses to his growing relationship with the individuals who worked for the Saudi government and others. They witnessed his conversion to Islam. So not only was he simplistic enough to be persuaded by these external forces, he wasn't even aware that they were recruiting him to convert. Again, Guandalo's claims, I've got to say this also, have never been corroborated by an independent source anywhere else. I have, however, heard it from other people in the on the fringes, on the outer elements of the intelligence community, the military operators who have done research on this and find it to be reliable. Publicly, Brennan has praised the goodness and the beauty of Islam, which he characterizes as a faith of peace and tolerance, the tremendous warmth of Islamic cultures and societies, he said 9 years ago, typically make visitors from non-Muslim lands feel very welcomed. And then they cut your head off. He lied concerning non-disclosure agreements for the people who survived the attacks at Benghazi. All those people, they're out of government. They still can't talk about what really happened. He hacked into Congress and lied about it. He said that ISIS was not, that they're not Islamic. The Islamic State is not Islamic. This guy was director of the CIA. Clearly, we know that he was a communist sympathizer, and now we find out that he's probably, in all likelihood, a fundamentalist Muslim convert. Running a little bit long, but you know what? I got to have a break. We're going to take a quick musical break, and then we're going to come back with some more of ACP right here, Patriot Nation Radio Network. Back after this.
I left my home in Norfolk, Virginia, California, home of mine. Straddled that Greyhound and rode him into Raleigh and on across Carolina. Had motor trouble to turn into a struggle halfway across Alabama. Well, a hound broke down and left us all stranded in downtown. Run away up on me, a through train ticket right across Mississippi clean. I was on that midnight flyer out of Birmingham smoking in the New Orleans. Somebody help me get out of Louisiana, just help me get to Houston town. There are people there who care a little about me and have all let the poor boy down. T-bone steak, all the carny flying over to the Golden State. When the pilot told us in 13 minutes he would set us at the terminal gate. Sweet low chariot come down, easy taxi to the terminal zone.
Cut your engines and cool your wings and let me make it to the telephone. Los Angeles, you may know Fort Virginia died 104-1009. Tell the folks back home this is the promised land. He would set us at the terminal gate. A swing low chariot come down, easy taxi to the terminal zone. Touch your engines and cool your wings and let me make it to the telephone. Los Angeles, you may know Fort Virginia died 104-1009. There's the folks back home, this is the promised land calling and the poor boys.
In here, we're mass communicating.
I love that. Yeah, we're back. A conservative's perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network, blogtalkradio.com. We do it live 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Smart fella, we're moving on right now because we don't have a whole lot of time. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get all this in. Representative Doug Collins, Republican from Georgia, demands impeachment hearings or call on Robert Mueller to testify. Doug Collins, representative from Georgia, who is the House Judiciary Committee's ranking member, writes a letter to Chairman Jerry Nadler, Jerry the Jowls Nadler, smartly using transparency to call his bluff. First, the letter. Dear Mr. Chairman, the Honorable Gerald the Jaw Nadler, today I write encouraging you to invite Special Counsel Robert S. Mueller III to testify before our committee without delay. If you seek both transparency for the American public to learn the full contours of Special Counsel's investigation, public testimony from Special Counsel Mueller himself is undoubtedly the best way to accomplish this goal. Last Wednesday, the committee voted to authorize you to issue a subpoena for the Special Counsel's report and underlying evidence used in the investigation. Democrats unanimously rejected a Republican amendment exempting material covered under the Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 6E, recording and disclosing the proceedings of the federal grand jury. In rejecting this amendment and supporting the subpoena, you and your fellow Democrats created an untenable but politically convenient situation, force Attorney General William P. Barr to break the law to comply with your subpoena or label him as part of a cover-up if he does not. In your opening statement at Wednesday's business meeting, you referenced investigations into President Richard Nixon and President Clinton as situations when Congress received 6E material. While grand jury material was released to Congress in those instances, your attempt to draw on this precedent and your repeated analogies between today and those prior instances thoroughly inaccurate. As you undoubtedly know, Congress received 6E information during the Nixon era due to a federal court order hinging on the fact Congress had already begun impeachment hearings in proceedings. In 1998, independent counsel Kenneth Starr was operating under a statute separate and distinct from today's special counsel regulations. Starr was an independent counsel, not part of the Department of Justice, and was required to advise the House of Representatives of any substantial and credible information which may constitute grounds for impeachment. To ignore the law and conflate prior situations with the current special counsel's report is irresponsible and imprudent. This behavior disrespects the laws we are supposed to uphold, and it has to stop. I'm kind of paraphrasing here a little bit. For nearly 2 years, and this is what he says in closing, Special Counsel Mueller oversaw an investigation that issued more than 2,800 subpoenas, executed nearly 500 search warrants, and interviewed approximately 500 witnesses. Attorney General Barr was never part of this investigation and instead simply reviewed the special counsel's final report and has provided Congress so far with the special counsel's principal conclusions. No collusion, no obstruction of justice. Those are the principal conclusions. While he can justify surrounding his decision to provide the committee with principal conclusions, it is Special Counsel Mueller who is best positioned to testify regarding the underlying facts and materials in which you're so interested. To that end, Special Counsel Mueller should be invited to testify before the committee during the week of April 22nd. Although the House is expected to be in recess that week, I think we can agree this business is too important to wait, and members of the committee will surely return to Washington at such a critical moment in our country's history. I urge you, do the right thing, follow the law, and invite the special counsel to testify before the committee. Immediately doing so ensures we will all hear the unfiltered truth from a man who conducted his investigation with integrity and professionalism. Indeed, you know the way to defuse the politics that... That's easy for me to say, but I talk for a living. The way to defuse the politicization and the weaponization of innuendo within the Mueller report is to what? Specifically, get Bob Mueller in front of the committee and ask him questions directly. And this is the exact correct approach that needs to be used to preempt an entire summer full of nonsense. Now, if Mueller's in front of the committee first, all the downstream manipulations by those who are part of the Mueller assignment become worthless. It's really good to see Representative Collins smartly deconstruct those plans and schemes that have been laid out there by Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff and Elijah Cummings and Gerald Nadler by giving them what they say they want but actually don't. And another Captain Obvious approach generally being overlooked, the absence of the rest of the team. Where's Lisa Page in the media? Where's Peter Strzok, James Baker, Nellie Orr? Why isn't the media having these folks appearing for interviews to highlight just how horrible President Trump's grand scheme was? Why are the panel discussion groups from D.C., the highbrows on all the talk shows, or the D.C. think tanks, why are these people not contacting Lisa Page and Peter Strzok and Baker and Nellie Orr or any other members of this group to talk about what went on in this investigation? I mean, these interference efforts by the part of the Russians, they're terrible things, right? It's horrible stuff. That's why we're at the place we're at. So how come we're not hearing from the people who were on the front lines? The people that were sent out there to defend our interests. Why aren't we hearing from Lisa Page or Peter Strzok or James Baker or Bob Mueller? I mean, there was a great, huge, terrible conspiracy between Donald Trump and Russia, right? Right? So why isn't the media interested in advancing that particular narrative through the use of those who would have been closest to that work? Lisa Page, Peter Strzok, James Baker, Bruce and Nellie Orr. These guys aren't in the government anymore. They're free to talk. What's 60 Minutes doing about this? How come they're not talking to the people that are no longer on the inside of government and completely free to tell their story about how hard they work and how hard people were working to protect the country from possible Trump-Russia conspiracy? I mean, seriously, the media is conspicuously absent on all this. For some strange reason, they're not interested in the story behind the Department of Justice and the FBI's efforts to save our nation from Donald Trump. Why is that? Why doesn't the media embrace the available sunlight? Why don't they have these people on? I don't know. It's a good question. And I think, yeah, we got a couple of minutes left. I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up. ACP is heard here live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern time on the Patriot Nation Radio Network here at blogtalkradio.com. We have a recorded version of the program that is now being heard on the Mojo 50 Radio Network. And you can go to mojo50.com. Outstanding hosts, outstanding programming. And we are somewhat overwhelmed a little bit, but just as proud and honored to be there as we have all the other places that have been kind enough to put ACP on the air, and we're grateful. That's Sundays, by the way, Sundays at 4 p.m. on Mojo 50 Radio. That's about all the time we have. Thanks so much for hanging out and spending a little bit of time here. It was good to get to visit with you. We will be back on Thursday promptly, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then.